Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's Pinkie Pod. Pow. How you doing out there? I'm sort of doing. I'm just not feeling quite 100% well for the last couple days. I'm not sure why. I think it's the weather change and probably just getting older. So hopefully I don't sound too worn out and ragged for this episode. I apologize if I have a little lack of energy. I don't think it's anything serious, but it's probably sinuses. Who knows? I think this is going to be a fairly detailed episode. So right from the start here, let's just get the business out of the way. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at PodPinky on Twitter, Pinky_podcast on Instagram. I also do novels, you know, and some other things. So you can follow me at my, or go to my official website, pinkyswearpress.com. It would be awesome if you join my Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Still trying to get a nice little community going there, and we could have lots of bonuses and fun. And that's patreon.com/pinkyswearpress. Of course, you could also really help me by telling people about the podcast, subscribing, reviewing, sharing, especially if you like it. If you don't like it, I'm not sure why you're here. I think that's, Teespring. I have merchandise and it's all my artwork. Teespring.com, Pinkie Pod. I share these things all the time, so another reason to find me on the socials. And Facebook, Pinkie Swear Press page. Now, some of my sources here, I'll tell you right off the top, are unresolved.me and mcsmrampage.com. And then a couple links I had followed from a Reddit page, which is, I think, also the Unresolved Reddit page. But really, I just followed some links out of there. And there's another one or two that I can mention that I, if I have time, if this doesn't go horribly long, I may just read from their page. So I'll tell you what it is then. So shall we just get to it? Oh, and why does the fan on my laptop only choose to come on when I'm recording? I don't know how much noise that makes. All right. December 31st, 2000, 11 a.m. A mother attempts to call her daughter, but the phone line seems to be dead. So she goes next door and rings the bell. But when no one answers, she decides to use her own set of keys to let herself in because she's a little bit concerned at this point. She had a right to be, because what she found was her worst nightmare. Mikio Miyazawa, who was 44, was found dead at the bottom of the staircase. He was covered with a drawer. These stairs led to a second story. She called out, the mother did, to the rest of the family, their names, calling for them, but there was no answer. All was quiet. Naturally, she went up the stairs and found Yasuko, 41, who was covered in clothing, and poor little Nina, only 8, who was face down. They had been stabbed the same as their father downstairs. In the next bedroom, the most horrific of all, Ray, only 6 years old, on his bed, strangled to death and covered with a futon. The subsequent police investigation is said to have uncovered 12,545 pieces of evidence. Yet to this day, the case is unresolved. No arrests, no named suspect. This is the story of Japan's Setagaya murders, the case of the Miyazawa family. Now, by all accounts, they were a typical Japanese family. Mikio was the patriarch, and he worked for Interbrand, a London-based marketing firm. I didn't see anywhere that said specifically what he did, but it has offices in over 20 countries, so a pretty big company. Mikio has been described as very congenial. His co-workers thought he was lovely, They said he got along with everyone and just seemed impossible that he could ever make enemies. Yasuko was his wife, and she was also seen as kind, compassionate, and a very good mother to her children, Nina and Ray. She was a teacher. Nina, who was in the second grade, was playful and active and was really into soccer and ballet when she died. Now, their son, Ray, had a speech impediment, and it was a bit of a stress to the family, but apparently they had just started looking into professionals, you know, for some help. So, basically, a family just that had, you know, the typical things going on and maybe a little issue with their son, but nothing major, just normal. Now, they had moved into their Setagaya home in 1990, a husband and wife had. It was, at that time, populated with at least 200 other families. So, and it seemed to be growing, and it, you know, burgeoning neighborhood. And so they thought it seemed like a good place to have children and raise a family. So this is one of Tokyo's districts. It is southwest of the main city and said to be, you know, it was very residential. You know, mostly residential, not as hustling and bustling as Tokyo, and a little more spread out, it sounds like, you know, houses and not all crammed together. So the house itself was actually more like a duplex. They lived right next door to Yasuko's family, her mother, who found them, and sister and a brother-in-law. There was no internal passage between the two dwellings, you know, nothing connecting that. They each had their own entrances, which is why mom had keys, you know, she had to go out and go back in their door. Right behind the home is a park. And at the time there were plans to expand it. So many people had already moved out of this district. So many that it went from 200 or so families down to about 4 families, which, as far as I saw, included the unfortunate victims of this horrific crime. It at this point sounds almost like a ghost town, but you have this huge park behind it, and it was also a skate park, which is right behind them. And if you look up these websites and the photographs of this, you can just see right to their house, right to this dwelling. It's, for some reason, there's a lot of people say there's something creepy about that. Well, obviously with the murders, but I think what is considered really creepy is that there's just a fence barely separating it, and you really do just have this view, perfect view of the house. You could just pretend that you were at the park and be stalking them. I don't know. It's just weird. So in the week leading up to the murders, Mikio is said to have confronted some loud, obnoxious group of skaters. And a witness claimed that around the same time, they had also seen Mikio confront some men who they thought were part of the Bosozuko, a sort of a motorcycle gang. And forgive me if I don't pronounce these things correctly. The Miyazawas were also planning to move, by the way, just like everybody else had, in just a few short months. They were planning to move, but obviously someone saw to it that they never had the chance. So these days, the general theory goes something like this. The killer entered the second floor bathroom window, which would face, I believe, towards that park. Dust screens from the window had shown signs of damage. There were also shoe prints found on the ground below the window, and a tree close to the window had broken branches. So obviously it sounds like they think somebody climbed up the tree. Mikio was thought to have been in his study on the first floor, maybe heard a noise, ran up the stairs to check where little Ray was likely already dead. They all seem to agree that the boy is the first to have been killed. I think it was closest to the bathroom. They think the killer saw Mikio, so there was a confrontation, because he was exiting Ray's room, maybe as Dad was coming up the stairs. There was a struggle, and Mikio is stabbed. He either falls down the stairs or is thrown down the stairs. Now the killer goes to Nina and Yasuko. His sashimi knife breaks in the process of the attack. They think Yasuko, thinking the killer has fled because his knife is broken, so I guess he takes off, finds a first aid kit and tries to help her daughter, Nina. Now, this is just like a horror film, you know, just escalating. Because now, of course, the killer returns from their own kitchen with one of their own kitchen knives and finishes what he started, even more brutally than he had stabbed their father. Now, they tested some stomach contents of the family, which they were able to place their time of death at approximately 11:30 p.m. That would be December 30th because they're discovered on the 31st. Another detail is that Nina and Yasuko may have hidden upstairs at some point because Nina's blood was also found on a particular futon. We'll get to that in a bit. Their wounds were the most aggressive. They were even stabbed post-mortem. There's different ideas about that, like especially since they say that it seems that they'd actually tried to help each other and he had walked away and then come back. So maybe he thought they were already dead and then heard them up there and realized they weren't, and that's why they came back. That's one of the ideas. We can't really say for sure. It gets really, you know, I did that frogging episode, and as I was looking up this part, it also reminded me of a Hinterfaichek, I'm probably remembering that wrong. And De Plant? There was another podcast I had listened to with things that were slightly similar to frogging, just not over a long term. Well, here we have another just creepy. So after the murders, it very much seems that the killer stayed in the house for a while. At least 10 hours. It's possible he was treating his own wounds, might have hurt himself in the process, which would not be uncommon with stabbing like that. They found what I think would be Band-Aids. They called them adhesive plasters. But they found some of them like they had been peeled off and they were stuck to notebooks. So that's a Band-Aid, right? So they with someone else's blood on them. And they found bloody towels and used feminine hygiene products like pads, you know, that were all used apparently to try to stop bleeding because there was just blood all over them. It also appears that this fucking monster had himself a little tea party. He drank 4 bottles of barley tea, ate a melon, and 4 ice cream cups. Then he decided he needed to surf the internet at 1:18 a.m., but he only spent 5 minutes and 18 seconds there. So this fucker actually tried to purchase tickets to a show with the family credit cards. And he was on a site that Mikio had bookmarked, the Shiki Theater Dance Company. He failed to get the tickets for whatever reason. But he logged on again at 10:05 a.m. for very precise, 4 minutes and 16 seconds. And during this little visit, went to Mikio's company pages and Yasuko's school pages. Then he pulled the power cord. It was not at the scene, like it was gone from what I read. There were prints on the mouse, but not on the keyboard. Personal documents were spread out, including diaries, on the dining table and also on the second floor sofa. The second floor bathtub was filled with receipts, the towels, the sanitary products and garbage, just whatever they had used. They put it all in the tub for some reason. and also some other documents.
They found unflushed feces.
And so they tested this, and they could tell that this person had eaten a spinach and sesame dish that some people say is something like a mother would make for you. They call it a very boring dish, and also string beans. And it had been eaten elsewhere and not at the house. I'm not really laughing at this, just as like, they have been so thorough, okay? The level of detail in Japanese investigation is just astounding to me, in a good way. Now, there were just a few things stolen. Yusuko, is it? She had apparently some money for tuition, so that was taken, and wallets had been emptied, but there were so many other things left behind that were valuable, including, least of all, you know, passports and things like that. So you know how this all ends. You know the ending now. So let's back up, shall we? How did we get here? So during the summer months, apparently people had been noticing that animals in the area were being tormented. Tortured, even. Like cats. And they'd found dead rats. One person commented that there was a stray cat that had been very friendly, you know, and then the next day they saw them with no tail. So what a fucker. And it might not even be related, but whoever did that is a fucker. On December 25th, Yasuko told her father-in-law that a strange car kept parking in front of their house. Several times this happened. And yes, there is a park back there, but there are legitimate parking lots. There are places for people to park for this area, so they didn't need to do that. December 27th, a man who was possibly in his 40s was walking around the house. Since there is that park there, it's really difficult to say whether or not that means anything. December 29th, a skater-dressed man, in skater clothes is what they were saying, is seen a few miles away, and it's considered odd because of the weather of the time. People thought he was underdressed. The reason it really stands out now, because obviously you might think, well, that doesn't really sound like much, but a man of the same description is said to have purchased a sashimi knife in that area, and there was only one sold at the market on that day, so it was easy to trace that. And December 30th, possibly the same man, again, so this would be three sightings, was seen about a mile from their home. Now, the day of, they were preparing for the holiday. It was almost New Year's, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. So around 6 p.m., they went shopping. They weren't terribly far from their home. They were at I actually practiced it before I started the podcast and said it, I think, fairly fine. Seijojo Kumai. Ugh. I've totally lost all of my words. Maybe it's because I don't feel well. But tomorrow's Tuesday and I'm supposed to put out an episode. Please forgive me. Seijojo Kumai Station. And that was apparently also where this person dressed like a skater had been seen. So this is where they went shopping. A neighbor mentioned that the car wasn't in the drive of the family's home, even at 6:30. Now, it is interesting to me that I don't know precisely who these people are, like a neighbor, a witness, because if you recall, I'd already said that there was maybe four families in total who still even lived there. Well, two of them were, you know, this family and their relatives in the one home. So, but maybe a lot of people still visited the park is what I'm thinking. Because I don't know who these witnesses are. This is specifically listed as a neighbor, though. Excuse me. So I guess that's one of the other two people. Now, around 7 p.m., Yasuko called her mother, who lives next door, and then Nina, the daughter, apparently goes over to watch some recorded program, some TV show they wanted to watch together, and she was there till about 9:30. Around 10:38 p.m., Mikio read a password-protected work-related email, and this matters because he was the only one who could access it. So I assume that's how they pinpoint that it was him, unless somebody could have hacked it, but seems that he's the one who read that. This matters because it is the last recorded known activity of the family. If they died around 11:30, that's less than an hour when whatever happened happens. So there's also some mention that around 10-ish p.m., somebody who was going by the park, was around the park or walking by, thought that they heard maybe an argument, you know, nothing really horrible, but maybe like a couple disagreeing, kind of having a little spat inside the house. 11:30 p.m. Yasuko's family says they heard either something like a loud bang. I've also seen it described as a thud. Nobody checked on anything. They probably just thought it was whatever. I don't necessarily think that's weird. You live right next to somebody like that. Or for example, I live in an apartment building. You hear things. People have heavy footsteps, or maybe they drop something, or you don't go investigating everything that happens. But they heard something. Apparently it did not alarm them. You know, so they went back to sleep. There is also around this time that another witness says that they saw a man hurrying along a path, a walkway, you know, next to their house. Again, we have a park there. Hard to say. Probably would see a lot of people around. There is also mention of a taxi driver who picked up three men, and he thought it was interesting because it was well past midnight, and also the fact that they were dropped off at a station that was not even that far away. I had the impression that maybe he thought, well, you could walk there. Why do you need a taxi? They were described as being middle-aged, and that one man must have been wounded because he left a blood stain in the back of his taxi, which is another reason he remembered this. And the reason the mother's call couldn't go through, remember she tried to call next door, was because the phone lines had been cut. So obviously the killer even fought to cut the phone lines. I don't know when they did that. It seems to me, just by my own powers of deduction here, that it would had to have been after he killed them all, because he hung around the house for 10 hours. Police think that this thud was probably Mikio confronting the killer. That's kind of what I was thinking, and maybe you were thinking it too. That might be when he fell down the stairs or was thrown down the stairs, however it happened. Most of his wounds were on his neck, which for some reason I find interesting. Like, you could probably sit here and try to picture grappling with each other, and there's probably forensic scientists that could explain that it's because one man is taller than the other, or the way they're, I'm sure that it would mean something to somebody, and it clearly does because it's mentioned, but most of his wounds were around his neck, and he was stabbed to death, by the way. And these wounds came from the knife, the sashimi knife, that was purchased the day before at that store. And I read two different versions. Now, one thing I read said that this is when it broke. But you, I'm sure, recall that I've already said when it came to the wife and the daughter that that's where it broke. Obviously, they can't precisely pinpoint that, is what I say. Or you could be attacking someone with a broken knife. Maybe that's why he needed to go get the kitchen knife. It's a horrible, morbid thought, but that would be something I would consider as an investigator. Maybe that's why they had to leave and come back. Like, oh, this one is not good enough anymore. I also should mention here that there's a ladder that apparently goes up to a third story little loft sort of situation, and there was a bed and a TV up there, so I'm guessing that's what the futon is they're talking about, that they found Nina's blood. And there's some speculation about whether or not the two of them had been up there or were hiding up there or whatever, because they were found on the floor towards the bottom of this ladder, you know. So that is one of the ideas. And they also mentioned that Mikio was still in his business friendly attire, as they called it. Like, it's later in the evening and he had not changed into pajamas or any other type of clothing. He was still kind of nicely dressed. I read a report that he might have still been wearing one shoe, but maybe not. With so many details already in this case, I'm going to figure some of them are bound to be a little off. I think we already mentioned that Ray, the little boy, was likely the first one killed, and that seems to be very much agreed upon. 6 hours after the discovery of the bodies, there was a young man admitted to a medical center in Tobolniko Station, which is a few hours north. He's maybe in his 30s. The person gave no name and no reason for their injuries. Like, they would not say how they were injured. It was severe enough to show bone. So the people who treated remembered that because it was pretty bad. Still, he was treated and released. Dun, dun, dun. Because, of course, no one would have thought too much of a lot of these things because they did not yet know about this horrific crime scene. Some of the other evidence. There's a lot of it, as I said, like 12,000, over 12,000 pieces of evidence. The police thought it was quite something that they were able to find not one but two murder weapons. Lots of times people take it with them, right? You don't have... And if you listen to True Crime, you know that you don't often have the murder weapon still at the scene. That's quite often literally the smoking gun. So the two knives were there. There was that open first aid kit, which the reason they thought she had tried to help Nina is because some of her blood was also on some of the wrappings and gauze and bandages. There were footprints all over the house. They were able to determine that it was... that they were left by a particular Slazenger shoe, which was widely available in Japan at that time. However, the size is more specifically Korean. You could have imports, of course, but they thought this was very interesting because it's not a size that you would typically purchase in Japan. Probably the most bizarre thing to me is that the killer left their own clothing behind. They didn't just leave it behind. This fucker folded it up all neatly. It was all set out very nicely, like no problem, nothing here to see. You know, just laying it out, like you're laying it out for your job interview tomorrow or to go to school or whatever. I mean, or like it had been freshly laundered. That's so fucking weird. And so they have all of these items. And they're positive that it must be the killer's because nobody in the family had this style of clothing. Nobody wore it. So one of the things they found was a so-called crusher hat. A lot of this would be considered by some people skate clothing. Maybe it's different in Japan. When I was looking at these things and even the shoes, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, I didn't think skater. And so we're going back to about 2000. Well, basically, for a little while, I was married to someone who was a skater. He definitely did not dress like this. The hat, maybe. It's almost sort of a beanie cap. But the shoes... Of course, obviously, that doesn't mean that the shoes they were wearing were the same shoes they skated in, okay, to be fair. But everybody kept describing these as skater clothes, and... some of it just doesn't look like it to me. But again, I don't know if it was the same trend in Japan. My little side note there. So they found the hat, a black Air Tech jacket, a white and purple long sleeve shirt, which would be raglan. The one they're showing, maybe it's just an example, looks like a baseball shirt, what we in America would call a baseball shirt. Black Edwin gloves, a multicolored, and what I saw in his example, it was kind of plaid, scarf with no tag, and a black handkerchief, which had been ironed. Okay? Just FYI. Ironed the handkerchief. The shirt had bloodstains on it, and as I mentioned, was not a style that was worn by the family. These things could only be purchased in Marufuro shops, which also sold a lot of the other items, like the gloves and the hat. But I guess it was a large retail chain. Funnily enough, when I started to Google it, I got ramen shops. I don't think that's what they mean. So blood that was tested from that and the bandages, they were actually able to ascertain that the killer was male with a blood type of A, didn't do drugs, and was a non-smoker. They could not match the prints to anything because, you know, if you've never been arrested for anything before, if you've had no reason to be fingerprinted, then they're not going to find your fingerprints. An interesting little detail is that on the thumbnails, I believe it was, they said there were a couple of swirl patterns that made it look like a pig's nose. So I guess if we could find the person with the pig nose on their thumb, I don't know. They were also able to judge that the person from the clothing, they've done a mock-up, you know, like they have kind of a mannequin with the clothes on it, right? So that you could see this if you wanted to. They ascertained that probably about 5'5". And another detail that for some reason, I guess because nowadays in the States, a lot of people make fun of this. They found the scent of Dracar Noir on a hip bag that they'd left behind. I mean, they basically, I don't know, it's like, did you wear these things in there or did you bring them thinking you were going to hang out for a while? I don't know, it's so fucked up. I just don't get it. I've listened to a lot of true crime and I don't know if I've ever heard any crime scene where somebody left some nicely and tidily folded clothes that belonged to them. Have you guys ever heard of that? Let me know, because I don't think I've ever heard of that. It makes me think, suddenly thinking other things too, like, well, did they want maybe it was an attempt at framing, so to speak. I suddenly had the thought that because people talked about that he may have confronted some, well, he did in fact, I guess, confront some skater people, some, you know, the loud skater boys from the park behind them. Maybe somebody wanted them to think that that's who did it. Dun, dun, dun. I would imagine that the police, because they're so thorough, would have considered that, right? That's suddenly what I'm sitting here thinking. Like, did they want people trying to throw them off, you know? Apparently you can read a lot more about this, and I do find myself now very curious about this novel. But in December of 2015, a noted true crime author, Fumiya Ichihashi, published a Japanese language book titled, I won't be able to read Japanese, so if you guys out there do, maybe you want to check this out. Which the English translation of the title would be Setagaya Family Murder Case. And in the book, he apparently has chosen a suspect. And they only calls him R, who he thinks was a former member of the South Korean military. And I read some other stuff that's not just something he pulled out of his ass, but I will get to that in a moment. So, yes, Ichihashi, for his theory, used what he'd read about evidence that was at the scene, which included dirt left behind that they actually managed to trace back to a Korean province. Ichihashi claims to have obtained the fingerprints of the suspect, which he alleges match up with those left behind at the crime scene. Okay, but here's my question, dude. If you were able to do that, how come the dude has not been arrested? But I can't read this book because I don't read Japanese. Somebody who can read this or knows about this, maybe you can tell us. Let us know. So as the person here on this little one of the web pages, Unresolved, I'm just going to read this bit straight out that they said, only time will tell whether the book leads to answers. But over 250,000 Japanese police officers and investigators have been involved with the investigation over the past 16, now, by the way, going on 21 years. This is clearly a few years ago, this website. But at the time of this, 16 years. The hard work of those 250,000 investigators paired with countless number of internet theories has resulted in the suspect escaping justice for the better part of this 2 decades. So it's still unresolved, even with all that. Now, I said that I would get into some more of the evidence because there's just so much. I'm just going to take this straight from the page now. I instead of trying to write it all down, I realize they have it nicely listed here, so I'm just going to read it. Forgive me if some of it is a repeat. So I'm back on mcsmrampage.com. And this looks like it was probably right from 2020, so this is fairly current. So, their section here, evidence and further speculations. Mikio Miyazawa's documents were in kanji. Kanji is one of the more complex writing styles in Japan and taught at an early age. They speculate that the killer was able to read the kanji, so it must mean they were raised in Japan. Well, we don't know. That's pretty loose. Blood from the bandages were tested. Oh, this is where I got that it's male with a blood type A. Footprints found throughout the house. I mentioned that. But a little more detail here. Near the bunk bed, outside the house, under the bathroom window, and on the stairs is where a lot of the footprints were. On the stairs, the footprints switch position halfway up from the wall side to the handrail side. What they're getting at here is they say it's consistent with military training, the step pattern. I think I'm having trouble picturing it. Oh, I guess they go from left to right? Or see, these things they think of, I never would have thought of that. It's so detailed. They mention the bang or the thud that was heard at approximately 11:30 p.m. Ah, after testing what the sound might be, they decided that it was the sound of the ladder that led to the loft being pulled down. Ooh. Maybe they were trying to, around 11:30. They were probably already dead, or the theory that the mother and daughter might have been trying to scramble up there to hide, that could also be true. Or since we know this asshole stayed in the house, I wonder if he went up there and pulled it down. Or he was chasing them. There's actually more than one possibility there. It's so close to the stated time of death. Well, let's see. That would make me think they were the last ones to be killed, just as most people theorize. Maybe they were trying to scramble up there and he came back in. Yeah? Oh, God, it's so horrific, isn't it? Just imagining that? Ugh. This is the website where they mentioned that the lines in the center of the thumbprint had resembled a pig nose. Here they have photographs, if you would like. I'll probably put them on Instagram as well. With the clothing, you know, kind of done up on a mannequin so you could see what it looked like. Oh, and I was wrong. It's not exactly a beanie. It's kind of a bucket hat. It's kind of a bucket hat. That's what it is. So, they mentioned this crusher hat. A total of 3,465 hats of this kind were on sale nationwide between July 1998 and November 2000 and were sold for around 1,900 yen. Based on the tag, it was believed that this hat was sold after September 21, 1999. The primary location of sale in the Kanto region was Marufuro Corporation. Yeah. So that was... Gosh, they are so specific. This is just amazing detective work. Gloves. were 26 centimeters in size, were not worn while committing the crime. Between 1998 and 2000, 10,755 pairs were manufactured and sold for around 1,980 yen. They were retailed primarily through Jeans Mate and Marlboro. Here's the scarf. They could not get any information on it because there were no tags. They say it was often used by children of similar height, fits the average neck of teens. They theorize that he may have used it since childhood. It's acrylic fabric with a green background color, red, black, orange, and dark green checks. Like I said, plaid. Handkerchief. Between 1995 and 2000, a total of 66,500 black handkerchiefs of this kind were manufactured and sold for 300 yen apiece. I mean, they just go on with all of this information. Do you hear my teapot in the back? I think I'll go shut that off. Hold on. Break. All right, I'm back, and now you probably hear them vacuuming out in the hallway. I do apologize. Recording during the day, especially a little bit earlier in the day like this, presents a lot of challenges sometimes. If you remember clear back to my first episode or two, you'll know that at least the serial killing inducing HVAC doesn't rattle anymore, but now there's always something else. And I could either stop and wait or just get on with it. I think we'll just get on with it. Where were we? The handkerchiefs. They actually found two handkerchiefs, and they had been recently washed and ironed. And this is another reason some people connect it with the military training, because in the military you would iron your clothes a lot, including probably handkerchiefs. Others think that maybe he had a female caregiver, I'm quoting, at home. Take that as you will. Could be a mother. Could be what, you know, I don't know. One of the handkerchiefs was folded into a triangle and had squeezed ends, so might have been used as a face mask. Ah, I see. The other one was unfolded, had a 3-centimeter cut in the center, which would allow it to be used like a pouch to prevent injury and slippage. The method is similar to something people do in fish processing plants. It is also similar to a way soldiers and gangs wrap knives during rituals and hunts in part of the northern Philippines. So we're finding out all kinds of weird and fascinating information here due to this case. So the jacket. From October 2000 to the day of the murder, which was in December, a total of 82,000 jackets of this kind, black and large sized, were sold nationwide. 10,194 in Tokyo alone. Priced between 3,900 to 5,900 yen and sold at Uniqlo direct run stores, mail order catalogs, and on the internet. So in the pockets is what I know I'm reading out where they bought them and everything. I guess I'm just giving you an idea of how thorough this investigation really has been. So in the pockets, they found sand from the coast of Miura Peninsula, in parentheses here, Yokosuka City. Pollen of pomegranate or zelkova plants. Dead leaves from zelkova and willow plants. Feces of birds that are smaller than sparrows. That's all it says. And soil particles that surround South Korea's capital city of Seoul. I mean, how amazing is testing and that you could pinpoint exactly where a particle of sand comes from? I just thought that was fascinating. I thought you might think that was fascinating. Now let's get to the raglan shirt or the baseball shirt. Again, that was interesting because it's the only thing that had blood stains, only available in Marlboro shops. 130 pieces were sold, only 12 were identified. It was very popular among young people of the time. The shoes we touched on before were identified through footprints. They think it was manufactured in Korea because of the shoe size, which I mentioned. And it actually was here. See, this is even more detailed. They were actually marked with Korean size code, which would be KOR 280. So if you're interested, since I've been mentioning it, from October 1998 through November 2000, a total of 4,530 pairs were manufactured in South Korea. They were sold in Japan for around 4,000 yen. I don't know a whole lot about yen, but I'm saying that's not super cheap, is it? Because some of the other stuff was like way less than that. So that's not super cheap. It's possible they were purchased in South Korea, or there might have been, you know, imports. The Drakkar Noir. This is manufactured by Guy Laroche in France. So it's been on sale in Japan since about 1982. It's 3,000 yen for a 30 milliliter bottle. Almost as much as the shoes, man. They found ingredients of this eau de toilette in the bag and on the handkerchiefs. They say here that the perfume was used by popular American professional skateboarders who were active in the 80s, which I did not know that. Now a so-called hip bag. Not exactly a fanny, well, kind of a fanny pack. It was a manufacturer in Osaka produced 2,850 bags of this type. 2,900 yen at a discount from stores in the Kanto region from 1995 to 1999. Now this bag was worn out, so it was probably being used for a long time. The length of the hip bag belt was 83 centimeters, but modified to fit a waist that was 70 to 75 centimeters, much smaller. Some evidence that was found was a piece of grip tape used for the surface of surfboards. Yes, I know what grip tape is, okay. They're repeating themselves here. I'm sorry, I'm kind of skipping. In the bag were two strands of black hair, which might belong to the killer. They even know how long. One hair was black, 2.5 centimeter long. The other was blackish brown, 1.5 millimeter long. They think both strands were cut by clippers. Okay, I'm a barber. I can tell you how you would know something had been cut. But I don't know if I could differentiate between a clipper and a scissor, but let me think about it for a second. A scissor, you would just go chop and you would have one flat, blunt cut. A clipper vibrates with teeth, so maybe it's not quite so flat on the edges. That is my semi-professional, I mean, I'm a barber, I'm a professional barber, but that is my guess, that there would be just a I can see how there would be a difference. Clipper has little pointy teeth, and how it works is by basically vibrating really fast back and forth. So that actually, wow. I don't think American police work is quite this detailed, frankly. Wow. I think the next thing I'm reading might have been controversial with a couple people, but let's see. I think these guys have the better details. They found a trace of fluorescent red agent normally found in stage production. Apparently, this was also found in the family's garage. But the garage was locked, and there were no indications that the killer had entered. So this kind of raised some suspicion that had the killer been there previously, before these murders ever took place, or did they work in a stage-related career? And remember, they tried to buy tickets to that theater, to that show, right? So that's kind of weird. But other people quickly eliminated the theory because then they discovered they were different. So we got all excited for nothing. They determined that, yeah, that was the controversy I'd read somewhere else. Some people only report one or other of these findings. But here they say what they actually found in the hip bag was the mark of a famous, they actually say, highlighter pen. So now they wonder if the student, if they were a student during the hip bag sales period. Okay. The bag also had sands in it, just like the jacket did. And also like the hip bag, I believe there was the Miura Peninsula, but another one is found in California, specifically near Edwards Air Base. My God, they can pinpoint that. Isn't that amazing? I'm trying not to scream here, like, wow.
This is really starting to lend a little more credence to that whole military thing, isn't it? Edwards Air Force Base? I mean, yeah, come on. They even say that the clothing was all washed in hard water, while Japan uses soft water. Who knows? But I don't know how long it takes hard water to leave clothing, do you? So yes, they suspect, just trying to put together a profile, I guess, that the killer was between 15 to 35 years old, possibly Korean heritage, or had recently traveled. I know some people think it was a vagrant. Probably around 5'5", probably right-handed, probably well-built. They do still think it was a skateboarder, since the brands themselves were popular among skateboarders and because of the grains of sand. Their reasoning for that is because California is the birthplace of skateboarding. Where I'm like, well, yeah, I think that's very tenuous, but since they are being so damned thorough, I'm not surprised that they consider it. There are places where skateboarders gather, such as Umekaze Park, which are on the Miura Peninsula. Okay, so we have two places. And there are competitions frequently held there. But they just didn't find any other leads on that. I mean, they're just trying to look at any possible way to... I respect that. They're looking at every single thing they can to possibly solve this case. Whereas sometimes you listen to true crime and it's so frustrating because they only focus on one thing and won't check out the other thing that is probably what it is. So I respect that they're looking at what we might think to ourselves, oh, that's nothing, that's so tenuous, that I respect this. I respect this. So, I mean, there's even some mention of a Jiso statue, a Buddhist-type statue, found near the home less than a mile away. But this is like a year, like this is April 9, 2001. You know, said to protect children in the afterlife who die before their parents, da-da-da. This could just be somebody remembering them or have nothing at all to do with it. Now we have some updated of 2006, the DNA. Some DNA testing, as DNA testing started to improve, I guess. And they used DNA profiling this time. And they believe that the murderer is probably of mixed race. The maternal DNA apparently indicates that his mother was of European descent, possibly from South European country near the Mediterranean or the Adriatic Sea. It's considered that the European material DNA comes from a distant ancestor from the mother's line. instead of his mother being fully European. So the paternal DNA indicates the father could be East Asian. Wow, this is so detailed, you guys, if you're a real geek for this. Analysis of his Y chromosome shown the haplogroup O-M122, a common haplogroup distributed in East Asian peoples, appearing in 1 in 4 or 5 Koreans, 1 in 10 Chinese, and 1 in 13 Japanese. So the police believe that the father could be Korean or Chinese. It also led the Tokyo Metropolitan Police to seek assistance from the International Criminal Police Organization because the killer may not be Japanese or living in Japan. But they don't deny that it could be, you know, someone in Japan. Wow, that's just so detailed. This is so crazy. So yes, this one is much more up to date. It's been 21 years since the incident and no suspect has been caught. So the case is now in the hands of Manabu Aide from Tokyo Metropolitan Police Special Investigative Task Force, who remains confident that the mysterious crime will be solved. God, I hope these people get justice. They have so much fucking evidence and no killer. This is just kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? And obviously this is very famous. I'm assuming it's still famous in Japan. And in fact, has just recently come up again. I'm sure I'm not the only one to bring this back up in a podcast, and I know there are older podcasts. I'm sure many other people are still talking about it. I don't know how far I'm into this. I don't care. This is probably a longer episode because I wanted to finish with this. Yeah, this was written January 15th, 2021. the Asahi Shimbun, Asahi.com, which is Asia and Japan Watch. So it's straight out of Japan, little website here, a little newspaper, titled Ex-Detective in Setagaya Family Murders Still Supports the Mother. And this was the first time I actually even saw her name mentioned. You know, they just said the mother found the bodies. So they have a picture of her. Oh, her name is Setsuko Miyazawa. Saitama. One eye is left blank on each of the five Daruma dolls lined up in the living room of Setsuko Miyazawa's house here. The figurines were gifts from Mitsuko Matsumori, 66, who gave one every year after retiring from Tokyo's Metropolitan Police Department. Miyazawa, who is now 89, and Matsumori have made a promise to fill in the blank eyes when police catch the person who killed Miyazawa's son and his family 20 years ago. As an MPD detective, Matsumori was involved in the murder investigation for 16 years until she turned 64. Over those years, she also supported the bereaved family and continues to be there for Miyazawa on a personal level. In addition to their investigative intuition, detectives need empathetic skills to deal with bereaved families and ask them about the victims to find clues. The bodies of Mikio Miyazawa, 44, his wife and their two children, 8 and 6, were found in their house in Tokyo's Setagaya Ward on December 31st, 2000. The MPD suspects the motive was money and goods because bank cards and other items were found spread out in the home. Police have also worked on the theory that the crime was committed by an acquaintance of the family. The perpetrator left clothing and other items at the crime scene. There were also signs that the killer consumed ice cream and tea in the home and used Mikio's personal computer to visit the website of a theatrical troupe. The perpetrator is believed to be a male around 170 centimeters tall with blood type A. Tests of DNA samples collected at the scene indicate he may have foreign roots. Matsumori was assigned to the case in April 2002, 15 months after the killings of the family of four. It was her first murder case. She tried to be herself in front of Setsuko and her husband, Yoshiyuki, who died in 2012 at age 84. The detective talked about her hometown, family work, and visited the victim's grave with the grieving family members. Once, Yoshiyuki told Matsumori in tears that the four were treasures to him. Unwinding our minds, she listened to us not only about the case, but also about our family, Setsuko said. We told her everything. Matsumori retired from the police force at age 60. The MPD reappointed her, and she continued to support Setsuko for four more years. It is unusual for a detective to be assigned to a specific case for 16 years, according to officials. Although Matsumori left the MPD in March 2018, she still visits Setsuko's house once a month with white Casablanca lilies, the favorite flower of Mikio's wife, Yasuko, and bento boxed lunches. After eating lunch, Setsuko always says, "Why did it have to be Mikio's family?" Matsumori said she has no answer for that question. The novel coronavirus pandemic has prevented Matsumori from visiting Setsuko's house, but they stay in touch through phone calls. "I feel frustrated because all I can do is wait with Setsuko until the suspect is arrested, but I want to continue to support her as best I can," Matsumori said. This article was written by Emi Iwata and Nobuyuki Takaguchi. And the hunt continues. And wow. Wow. It's pretty crazy, isn't it? It's pretty crazy. I do highly suggest that you go particularly to MCSM Rampage. That's all one word. It's all together. MCSM Ram, RAMPage.com. And there's two parts to it. They have a part one and a part two. This was by Khadija Rida, is the author of that. Very detailed. Really impressive. Oh, yes. And the page I'm looking at right here. Okay, this was posted October 27, 2020. So it is definitely one of the more updated sections. The other webpage, let me tell you again, was unresolved.me. That was more like a 2016, I think. And bear with me while I scroll way, way, way back. It was actually very well done. It has some photographs, so you can kind of picture this. I know the person here somewhere, as I was reading this, mentioned as I was researching the podcast. So I don't know if they still do, but they must have had a podcast. Oh, yes. Well, yeah. Here. Oh, okay. Right in front of my face. I thought it was a video. You can play right here what looks like about a 50-minute podcast. So I don't know if this is just the this might be the transcript of that whole thing. There we go. So the Set the Gaia Murders Revisited is what it says. Unresolved is apparently the podcast. I'll have to look and see if this is something that's still running. Looks like this takes you to a Spreaker link. Does anybody have any theories? I mean, gosh, what did we say? A quarter of a million police officers? I guess if that many police officers can't find them, I don't think we will, but you never know. It's so sad. It's just so sad. I think that the father probably tried to struggle with this piece of shit. And yeah, total piece of shit. I mean, obviously it's horrific enough that you would slaughter an entire family, and particularly just a six-year-old boy and a little girl. You know, you would just slaughter a family, slaughter the children. But there's something very particularly disrespectful and to defile the house. You know, to just the arrogance. Or maybe they have a mental issue. I don't know. I don't want to say that because I don't, you know, obviously people with mental issues don't necessarily always go out killing people. But what kind of person stays at the scene of the crime? It's right off the top of your head. You're just like, God, that is so arrogant and cocky and like, oh, I'm just going to hang out here, even though I think it's particularly cocky and disgusting when you realize that that's basically a duplex. There are people just separated by a wall right next to you, and you're just trusting that they're asleep this whole time. You're just, or a really, really horrifically chilling thought, or maybe they figured if anybody woke up or came to the house, well, I'll just kill you too. Oh, it's just, yeah, it's giving me kind of the heebie-jeebies just to know that there was, I can't imagine not only finding your daughter and your son-in-law and, you know, and your grandchildren, finding them brutally murdered, but then also on top of that, finding out that the murderer was right next to you for hours doing things in your relative's home. I think I would be a combination of, you know, horrified, scared, and then eventually I'd be angry. You know, I could see just going through every single emotion. Like, are you fucking kidding me? They were there the whole time. I think that would just really, I would be so mentally fucked up, wouldn't you? And even if it wasn't your family, just imagine being in a duplex, you know. Just these things separately are horrific enough. Like if I had a neighbor who got killed and then I found out later that the killer was next door for, you know, 10 hours, and be like, oh my God. Okay, I'm going to move. You know, wouldn't that just be so fucked up? All right. Well, I hope you made it this far. I would like to apologize if I was a little disorganized this time around. I know I said right at the top of this that I'm feeling a little bit off. I'm not looking for sympathy. And, you know, if it wasn't already Monday, maybe I would just do this if I felt... I'm not sure I'm going to feel better later, though. And I thought, okay, I need to go ahead and do this. It's on my mind. normally I have had up to 4 episodes already queued up and ready to go, but I actually have not done that quite as much lately. So, and I'm going to be busy most of this week. And so I figured I did not want to have an empty week. And another thing I'd been researching was not going to be, it's more of a short one, a mini pod. So enough of that rambling. Thank you for listening this far. Do follow me on the socials, PodPinky on Twitter and Pinky_podcast on Instagram. I think I'll put up some of these pictures and some 3D stuff of the house. And yeah, you are welcome to Google more about this. Did I spell that? I should spell this for you if you want to look it up. Setagaya. Setagaya Murders. Very, very, very famous and very much still back in the news. Back in the news, which is kind of what prompted me. I think I saw it somewhere. I saw it somewhere and made me think, yeah, I'm going to check into this. So that's this week's episode, and I'm going to give you a kind of a week. It almost feels like I shouldn't do this at the end of this with this. I was thinking about my opening music, and I'm like, that's really peppy for an episode like this. But a little quiet pow. Stay salty, and thanks for listening. Bye-bye.